So here we are, week eight. I'm thinking of it as two courses, but it's 12 weeks in all. So we're in week eight. And what we want to be looking at today is the self and the world, the self in its world. I said at the end of the last class, I talked about the self pervading our experience. So we've been using or I've introduced this idea of pervasion, which is helpful. I think it's I don't want it to be confusing for people. The basic idea is that it's the fundamental alternative to our usual subject-object orientation, where there are things in the world, there are objects, and there's the bystander, and there's the relationship between the two, or the lack of relationship between the two, and that's the model that we looked at for that we saw. If you did the reading from if you read chapter 5 from Love of Knowledge, that's the basic orientation. He doesn't use the word bystander there, as I recall, but here's the self in its kind of separate space. So there's a fundamental dualism. And that shows up then in terms of subject and object. And when you talk in terms of self and world, which Rinpoche does do, I'll give you a reference later on when we get there. Things change pretty dramatically. And one way of talking about that change is to say that the self is pervasive. And we talked about pervasion last week, and maybe it came up earlier, but we talked about it last week in terms of not only the self being pervasive, but things like feelings being pervasive. So that if I'm feeling sad or if I'm feeling tired, that feeling pervades the whole, not just the whole of my experience. If you say the whole of experience, that's a subject-object or a subjective-objective way of talking about things. In the subjective realm, I feel sad, and that colors all of my experience. The point in terms of talking about the field and talking about space as we inhabit it, space as a dimension of how we live our lives, if you talk about it that way, then sadness, for instance, the feeling of sadness pervades all of space. And it's not just shoved off into the subjective realm. That's really what Rinpoche is writing about in chapter 5 of Love of Knowledge. There's a line in there that I've always found very powerful. He says, once you've set up this subject-object split, then all of what we care about, all of what makes us human, in a sense, is placed in this subjective realm, which we really have no access to. And we'd have to talk about that quite a bit, what that means to say we don't have access. I don't want to go there. But the line that has always struck me there, he says, when that happens, what is meaningless comes to the fore by default. So we find ourselves living in a world which is without meaning. It's a meaningless world. It's the world that science takes as its subject matter, as its field of inquiry, with the result that we feel like we're living in a universe that is not friendly to human beings, that is not open to human beings. And our understanding of space is all about that. It completely reflects that. And part of what we're doing is making space friendly again. So that's what pervasion is about. I didn't actually mean to go into a long discussion of pervasion, but there it is. But I do want to have us do a little practice with pervasion to start with. So this is, I think we did something similar last week. What I'd like us to do for a few minutes has three steps to it, I guess. So the first step is to ask what you're feeling. Just what are you feeling right now? You don't have to put words to it necessarily, because feelings tend to be, I would say, more complicated than what we can easily describe in words. But just ask yourself what you're feeling. And so the first step is to ask that question in terms of your embodied self, you know, in terms of really being here. You know, so we start with the body. If we don't do that, I was kind of experimenting during the week, or at least I rediscovered during the week, let's say, that if you don't ground it in the body, it gets kind of diffuse. It turns into kind of a story about what you're feeling instead of the feeling itself. So first step is ask what you're feeling and really try to connect that feeling in with your own being in your body. And then the second step is, to start to look around, or it doesn't have to be look. Seeing seems to be a natural way to do it, but you could do it with one of the other senses. Hearing would be the next obvious choice. And let that feeling, whatever you're feeling, and it stays grounded in the body, but develop that sense that it also pervades everything you see. And then the third step would be, you know, this feeling that is in the body and that pervades what you see is global, you know, that it fills the whole field. So whatever comes along, whether it's things that you see or thoughts that you have or sounds that come by, let the feeling pervade the whole field of your experience. So those are three steps, but the main ones really are the first two, and then the third will kind of develop naturally, I think. Let's try that for a few minutes, okay? So we just had a little technical glitch there. But it came up while we were doing this practice, which was really meant to reacquaint us or remind us of what that meant to pervade the field, for experience to pervade the field. So we'll talk about that a little more now. And we'll talk about it in terms of the self and its world, which is really where we mostly want to focus today. I do see that David, undeterred by technical glitches, has a comment on that practice. He said, looking out the picture window, took a deep breath, everything expands, green fills everything, a full view. The feel is pleasant, full, at home, wholesome feeling. That feeling made green have a heartfelt feel. Everything felt good and green. Very nice. So part of what I think is interesting with when you look at the field and you look at the this idea that you can pervade the field has a lot to do with multidimensionality, which is one reason that I set up the exercise that way. The field of seeing is a field, and the field of feeling is a field. But they're both within, I don't know the best way to say it. You could say maybe within the broader field of space. They're both dimensions of space. You can be operating, and in fact, we do operate in many dimensions at once. So that's part of what we want to explore also. Okay. Let's go on and talk about pervasiveness with respect to the self, or let's look at it in terms of objects for a moment. So if I look at the clock in front of me, would I say that the clock pervades the field? I don't think that makes sense. You know, the moment you identify something, you're locating it in within the field. You're locating it in a particular place. And so I don't think you really want to say that the clock or whatever it is I'm looking at or whatever it is I'm hearing pervades the field. We talked about this before last week, and we talked about it before that too, that you could say that the field of seeing is pervasive. Right? And that's related to the sense of the field in physics that, you know, those articles we looked at refer to. Things show up in the field of seeing, but they're kind of distortions of the field or distortion. It's not in the negative sense. They just come up as particular configurations within the field, you could say. So, okay, objects don't exactly pervade the field, at least that's how I see it. But what about the subject? Does the subject pervade the field? I want to look at that in a specific way. But first, I see that Michael has a comment on the field also. He says, or this pervasion exercise. I found it easier, he says, to reach out with a global feeling into the field of vision. When I tried to reach out into the field of hearing, I found the hum of my computer irritating. Okay. Well, so that was the feel of the field was the irritation, right? Or at least that became an aspect. The sound had the power to invade me, ignoring my attempts to pervade my environment. Yeah. Why won't you let me pervade the environment, sound? Okay. It's very interesting the self, when you describe it that way, the self is is doing something within the field. It's busily engaged in pervading, right? And that's interesting. And that kind of goes in the direction that I want to go into right now. So let's see. David said, perverting the pervasion. Yes, Ken. Okay. Okay, that's very nice. That's great. The aliveness of appearing. Yeah, okay. So those are, you know, one of the things about TSK, and maybe I don't need to say this, but one of the things about TSK is that wherever you look, there's something really remarkably fascinating to explore, you know. And so, I'm laying out a particular way of exploring things, but both of you are, you know, sort of going in different directions or exploring in different ways. And I think those really both sound very interesting. So the body of knowledge, I mean, one of the things you'd say is that knowing pervades the field, right? So that's another dimension, you could say, but maybe it's kind of, I don't know, you might want to say it's the master dimension, but I'm not sure you want to say that. Okay. And it's related, what you said is, you know, the likeness that comes in is related to what David described with the field, that, you know, kind of the positive feeling of the field pervades what's in the field. So there's so many different dimensions. Now, Hayward, you said, say that again, the appearance?
The aliveness of appearing.
Okay, the aliveness of appearing. Again, the you know, aliveness you could think of as a kind of available dimension, let's say, because experience is alive. So we're going to talk in a few minutes about ownership, about how the self goes about claiming ownership over everything. And one of the things that it claims ownership over is the aliveness. You know, what's alive in my experience is me. And what you're saying, I think, Hayward, is that you know, you can shift that. It's appearance itself is alive. That seems very true. Okay. So I wanted to give an example so the question that I asked was, you know, objects through their identity are not, or given that they have specific identities, that's what makes them objects. I think you could probably find a way. There's always different interpretations, but it's not intuitively clear that you could say that an object pervades the field, as opposed to the sense, whatever senses through which you engage that object. And then I asked, what about the self? So I want to give an example that isn't specifically about the self, but I think that helps us get there. And it's an example that I seem to use a lot with TSK, maybe because it's part of my experience a lot, and other people's too, mostly. You hear a car going by. So if you were practicing just engaging sound as sound, the car going by part of that is not really in the dimension of sound, right? It's not in the field of sound. It's an explanation or a description that you're adding on. You hear something and you identify it, and in identifying it, you know, you're not you're turning it into an object. You're doing that through hearing, And we're used to mostly identifying objects through seeing, but of course you can do it through hearing also. So you hear a car going by and you assign an identity. But that identity that you assign to the car comes with a whole field of its own, a field of meaning. And what I mean by that is the car is part of a world in which there are roads and there are people who make cars and there are people who buy cars and there's your car and there are gas stations where gas, you know, and there are mechanics who repair cars. And there's, you know, there's so much. I mean, the very idea of a car brings with it essentially a world. Maybe not the world as a whole, although arguably you could say everything that shows up really implicates the whole world. But let's just keep it a little narrower in that and say there's this world that's related to the car. And hearing the car brings all of that in. There's a world of meaning. And that, what I want to suggest is that too is a field and it's pervasive. You know, when you hear the car, in the moment that you're hearing the car and identifying it, there's that world as a whole. And if you think of that world, I think the way to think about that, or a useful way to think about it, is that there's a story, a meaning. There's a meaningful world. Maybe that's a better way to put it. There's a meaningful world. And there's a story that's getting told, or it doesn't, of course, you don't have to tell it because it's assumed, it's presupposed. It got told a long time ago. So, you know, it's a little bit like if you're holding money in your hand, there's a whole world of meaning that has to come together for that piece of paper in your hand to be money. You know, it has to make sense within a vast context. So that context is what I'm talking about here. And it's a meaningful story that pervades the field. So that's a different way of pervading. You know, we've been talking about how the senses have their fields and they're pervasive, and the feel of the field is pervasive, but the story of the field is also pervasive. And I bring that up as an example because I think it helps us understand what goes on with the self. The self is also a story that pervades the field. And Rinpoche says that. He doesn't talk about pervasion. Right? I should look it up sometime and see if the word gets used in TSK at all, but it's certainly not a theme. But he does talk about stories. And in particular, he talks about the self as the founding story, or that's not quite right. He talks about the founding story, and this is in Love of Knowledge. The place where it gets discussed most fully is chapter 21 of Love of Knowledge, if you want to go back and take a look at that. So it's not exactly that the self is the story. He says that the founding story is, here I am. So what's implicit in that, I think, is that it's the self in its world. That's the founding story. Here I am in this meaningful realm. That's the field in which I operate. And it's the founding story because it's pervasive, right? It's always the case. Of course, there are exceptions in terms of, you know, you can challenge that. In fact, we have. But just speaking generally, it's always the case that whatever is happening, it's my experience. Right? It's always true, here I am, and then something is happening. So in that sense, it's the founding story. So Ron says, I like that way of putting it, that the self is a story that pervades the field, so much dependent on streams of thought transmitting content. Yeah, that's exactly the where we want to explore this. So just to give you a sense of how I'm planning on looking at this or exploring it is we'll talk today about self and world, and we'll do some practice in a little bit, as the kind of founding story. And then next week, I want to look more generally at the idea of stories and thoughts, the relationship between them. But for now, we say the self is the paradigmatic story. You know, it's the fundamental. This is how we understand the world, is in terms of this fundamental story of the self and its world. Now, the interesting or an interesting thing about that, once we have this founding story, which we generally stick to, you know, let me digress for a moment. You remember back in, I think it was the second class, we did some practice with breathing, and we talked about engaging breathing without having a sense that there's a self that breathes, right? That we, in terms of the it breathes. That would be a way of challenging that founding story. It's possible to do that, I think. But in the vast range of our experience, that founding story that here I am, you know, the self in its world, that pervades the field. So let's do a practice with that. I mean, I just claimed that. Okay, right. There's a couple of people commented on that. Hayward says, the me in the middle of this. Yeah, I think that's a good way to say it. Well, we'll talk a little bit about the I and the me. I think that's an interesting question. What's the relationship between those two? So we'll at least touch on that in a bit. But yes, if you know, if that's a helpful way for you to think about it or present it to other people, yeah, the me in the middle of this. Ron says again, what seems so interesting is that by becoming more attuned to space, that awareness or knowing can become more familiarized with the silence and openness that is not contaminated by thoughts, but can also allow thoughts. Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. There's another, you know, another way of thinking about that is you know, it's when you say the silence and the openness is contaminated by thoughts, but it's possible to go back before that contamination. Well, I think it's also possible, if you recognize the way that stories are operating or thoughts are operating, that they don't have to contaminate the openness. They can, you know, they can arise without contaminating the openness. So those possibilities are both there. And in fact, maybe that's what you were pointing to. Okay, and Michael says, the founding story of the self seems different than the sense that a whole world already exists. One invokes ownership, centrality, a need to be in control and to survive. Oh, okay, one, that is the one of this founding story of the self. The other, which is the story that the world exists, is that the world is already established. Yeah, I think that's right. And I think those are two dimensions of one story, really. The founding story, as I see it, is the self in its world, the here I am, or the me in this, right? I'll give you an example that I think makes your point. A friend of mine told me this story many years ago, that when she was little, she was driving. She was in a car with her mother. Her mother was driving, and they were stopped in an intersection, And a truck passed through the intersection, and the load that the truck had hooked onto it was a house. You know, there was a house mover. So it was a, I've never actually seen that, but well, maybe, anyway, she did. So this house came by in the street. And she said that she had nightmares for a long time afterwards because houses are not supposed to move. Right? Houses are fixed and solid. And in the same way, if the world is established, it's not supposed to go anywhere. And if you somehow had the sense that the whole world was moving or was changing, and sometimes you do, right? And it's very, I mean, not often, but sometimes you do, and it's very disturbing. So the story of the self in the world is, here I am, I'm the owner of my experience, I'm the one who makes sense out of things, and all these other elements that go along with the self, and I'm in a world, and the world is fixed, the world is solid. So, okay. So I wanted to do a practice, and we are going to run a little late because of that glitch that we had. Basically to explore that, it's just a, you know, sometimes a practice just consists of saying, well, if things really are like that, what is it like to experience it that way, right? So just try to get a sense of the self as the founding story, or this the here I am as the founding story. So again, I'd say start with the body, start with your sense of really being here, and then just see what kind of sense you get of inhabiting that story. Now, we'll say it that way right now, maybe later we'll say it a little differently, but you know, you inhabit the whole of the field of your experience, and that's fundamental and pervasive, and the sense of the self is everywhere in the field, because that's the founding story. That's what I'm suggesting. See if that's what your experience is. Let's try that for a few minutes, okay? Just seeing, what is it like? Is that really true? Is the self a kind of founding story that pervades the field? And what does that feel like? Okay. Okay. So, what did you notice? What do you have to say about that?
I'm seeing that. So Hibbert has a comment. Ron agreed with Michael's earlier comment, which we discussed. I'm looking at the chat box. And then Hibbert says, the self feels central and intrinsic to meaning. Meaning seems self-referential. The to me or the I think. Well, that's right. That seems, I mean, that is the idea. You know, whatever else or whatever meaning is going on, it refers to the self, or and not just in a kind of a casual way, like you refer to a character in a novel. It refers to the self as central, as you say.
Okay. And David says, when I focus on and identify anything around me, I see it's all in relation to me. Most of the objects were placed here by me, even the trees outside the window. What, I guess, were planted by you? You've lived in that house a long time. Without me in the picture, there would be no meaning, since I make the meaning. So there's two things there. One is, yes, you are in some sense the origin of things, and that may be, in the sense, as you say, you put everything where it is. But that's kind of a very embodied, specific sense of this broader sense that, I'm the one who makes the meaning. This is what this means. This is why I mean, it's my world, right? We'll look at that a little more in a moment. Yeah, and Ron says, I, me, and mine. Right. Very true. And some of you are familiar with Rinpoche's, some of the things Rinpoche's been writing. I mean, he's published several books in the last few years, not TSK books. But he's gotten very interested in this idea of I, me, and mine, going back to joy of being and probably going back beyond that. But we don't have to, we don't need Rinpoche's authority for that. It's true. I, me, and mine are kind of manifestations of this fundamental truth, it seems like. Or at least that's what we want to explore.
Karin says, oh, Karin, you can use the chat. Good. The here I am brings things together, making sense of what appears. Yeah, it's the it, you could say the founding story, and you could say maybe the unifying story. Right? Everything comes together through the founding story or through the I. And Rod says, so embodiment is tightly located. Well, that's very interesting, and I want to say something about that in just a moment. And Ken says, he gives an example of what he calls the initiation of a founding story, which is just where did I put my iPhone, right? Yeah, that's a, I don't know if I'd call that a founding story. It's one of the stories that arises on the basis of the founding story. Maybe that's a trivial distinction. Oh, it is, huh? Okay. But wasn't there a self there before who starts worrying about where the iPhone is? Okay. There's no primary founding story. Well, maybe you could say the founding story gets renewed in every moment in different iterations and different formulations. Would that satisfy you? Because I like to hold on to the idea that the founding story is a founding story, and then there are other stories. But maybe not. Maybe you would rather. Okay, so it's a founding story to a particular way of knowing. Okay. Well, I think that you could put it this way. This goes back to Michael's comment. He said the way that the story of the self in its world, it has these two sides, right? And the self is the one that's assigning meaning,
And the world is always there. The world is always established, right? It's interesting to look at that and to realize, if you say, well, that is a story, that it could just be, you know, that in every moment, there is a founding story going on. And that goes back more to, I think what both you both Ken and Hayward have said. The story may shift all the time. Whatever situation you're in, there's always a founding story, and it seems to always be connected to the self or to the here I am. But, you know, it's probably not right to say that the self, that it's always the same founding story. It's just that in any situation, there's a founding story related to the self. You know, Ken, you... Right. So Ken said, since it's probably not being recorded, Ken said the act of initiating a founding story puts quotation marks around the founding story, because then how can you call it a founding story if it's being initiated in every moment? The word initiate is maybe a little tricky, because then it leads you to ask, well, who's initiating it? You know, is there, so maybe, you know, you could say it's arising in every moment, and it arises as a founding story. And every moment has its founding story. But maybe there isn't an identity. Excuse me? Right. So if there is a, you know, if you have a sense that someone has initiated the story, which is not how we usually think of our experience, but since let's assume we've gotten very sophisticated and that is how we think of our experience, then that sense that there is someone who has initiated the story, or, you know, maybe you could just say there is someone who is assigning meaning, or, you know, that is part of the story, right, in every case. Okay, well, this theme of founding story is very rich. It's one of the many themes, you know, one of the things I've realized recently in as I think about this course and where it's going, it's a big problem with time, space, and knowledge with the DSK vision, is that it's always so rich. That, you know, I keep trying to simplify in a way. I keep trying to say, well, let's just look at this part over here, and then we can really go into it. But then that part opens up and expands, and you could spend a long time going into that, you know. So the founding story is a good example of that. But I want to move on for a minute here, because we are running a little late. I mean, we're deliberately running a little late. But still, I want to move on. However, let's go back to some of the comments in the chat box, because there's quite a bit. Okay. So Michael says, the sense that a living world arises from a larger realm that I control or can even know is a refreshing feeling. Yeah, it may be that you know, just having this sense that you know, the self that claims to be the one who's in control and assigning meaning and all of that, that's a manifestation, that itself is a story, does point you towards more lively possibilities, say, and as you say then, Michael, a refreshing feeling. Okay. And Ron asked the question. He says, okay, so if here I am is only a story that has no intrinsic foundation, then where am I? Why locate me here? Well, that's part of the founding story. You know, it's the story is not only I am, but I am here. So there is a story that gets told that locates me here. Why does it locate me here? You know, as opposed to somewhere else? Well, it has to do, I think, with our embodiment. But, you know, you can, it's easy to see that it wouldn't have to be that way. For instance, in a dream, you know, we're located somewhere else. And our locations may shift in dreams. You know, you have a dream, you say, and then suddenly I was somewhere else, you know. And it's also true, and this gets a little more in the direction of where I wanted to go next week, the thoughts can be like that too. If you start thinking about something that happened yesterday, one way of talking about that would be to say that, you know, if that's where your mind goes, you know, and then, you know, 30 seconds later, you kind of come back to the present. But for that 30 seconds, you were in the past. Well, it seems like your where has shifted, right? The here of here I am. So you're always located here, but that here could be something, completely different. Let me actually raise a point here that I thought would be interesting to look at as a walkabout practice that's very much related to the point that Ron raises. It's something that Rinpoche says. I couldn't find it when I was looking for it. I think it's in Knowledge of Time and Space, but I'm not sure, and I couldn't find it. But he says, the way that objects are located in the world, are located in space, is one thing. But the way that the self is located in space is really very different. And we could talk about that in lots of ways. But the way that I wanted to point to, that he points out, is if you actually look at how the self inhabits space, there's a certain sense that wherever you go, you take your space with you, right? It's not as though you leave one space behind and move into another space. It seems as though you're always occupying the same space, which then, you know, as you move through the world, your space does too. That would be the walkabout. Just look at that and see if that's the case. Because if it is, one of the things about that is it suggests that our understanding, we kind of assume that the self is an object. I mean, the body certainly is an object. And that it operates in space like other objects, but maybe not if you look at this. So it's just something, it's a little bit of a sidestep, you know, it's not the main point, but I just thought it might be interesting to explore. So I'll remind you in the transition about that. Okay. Well, I don't want to go too much farther because we have stopped. We didn't get quite as far as I had thought we could, but let me just make one point and then we'll stop. And that is, there's still a couple of people commenting. Let me go back to that. I always like to make sure I've covered the comments. Okay. Lee says, my experience resonated with Michael's. First, there was an eye at the center of reality. Next, there was the sound of typing arising within the same space as within which the experience of I-ness arises. Yeah. So the typing is like that's part of the world coming in. Do I understand that correctly, Lee, that you're saying there's a world that certainly doesn't depend on us. And that's part of what we discover in the here I am, ordinarily, right? I guess a partial exception might be lucid dreaming, but I'm not going to try to go there. Because even in a dream, you know, we think of ourselves, we find ourselves situated in a world, the world of the dream, whatever it is. So, okay. Michael asks, could Ken's multiple founding stories be connected to the idea of a readout with no past to count on? Yeah, I think that's okay. Ken agrees, and I agree too. Okay. And David says, instead of thinking when you remember the past that momentarily I was in the past, rather momentarily the past was in the present. Well, that's okay. Let me suggest that we could look for different ways to formulate that. I mean, it seems like there's a variety of ways you could say that. So is certainly the am, we've talked a little about the here and about the I, but the am seems, you know, it seems like we're always in the present, right? So if we're in the past, if we're remembering something, does that mean that the past is now in the present? Is it the same present? Okay, many, many things to look at there, and they may sound like they're just kind of playing with language, but you know, language is how our stories get shaped. So it's not a just language. You know?
Okay, Lee says indeed, but Lee, I'm not sure whether you're agreeing with David, or I'm going to assume that's what happened. And Ron says yes, consciousness need not be located.
Okay, very interesting. So kind of getting some pushback, but the structure of the here I am structure, what does that tell us about consciousness? Does it mean that there is always a location or not? I'll leave that open. And David asks, are past and present the same space? Well, okay, again, that goes back to what we were just talking about, so I'm not going to comment further about it. The one further point that I wanted to make was that there's kind of this twofold structure that the self has with regard to space. On the one hand, there's the sense that the subjective realm is separate from the objective realm. That was the reading from Love of Knowledge we talked about, chapter 5 from Love of Knowledge. You know, we find ourselves in our subjective realm, and we're the bystander, to go all the way back to the beginning of the first course and the reading that was from Inside Knowledge. We're the bystander, we're separate from everything else. And in a sense, you know, we don't even exist in physical space at all, the I, right? But then there's also this sense that the self is pervading the whole of your experience, right? That the founding story is there's nowhere you can go where there isn't, where that story, even if it's changing all the time, or becoming it, even if there is a different founding story in operation all the time, it's pervasive. That's what it means for it to be founding. Right? And so the self, there's these two different things going on. And I think one way to think about that is to say that what the reason the self can do that is because it has this tool available to it, which is mindness, right? The self is always reaching out and saying, that's mine. And I don't just mean like saying, that's my computer. That's part of it. but it's saying, that's my experience, right? It's my world. It's my meaning. And that mindness is the self's way, I think, of being pervasive, of being the central reality of what's going on in any situation. So that's something to look at. So I had a few things in mind to do, which we are not getting to, but I'll probably address them in some way in the transition. I may actually assign another exercise for you to do that we didn't get a chance to do. But we'll stop there for today. So thanks, everybody. I'm sorry for that little glitch, but we survived. Okay. Take care. See you next week.